You are Locked On Bears, your daily Chicago Bears podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome into this Locked On Bears, Locked On Rams crossover podcast here. I am Lauren Cox from Locked On Bears, joined somewhat ironically by Bear Modder from Locked On Rams, who, you know, a guy going by the nickname Bear. I mean, what are you doing hosting a Rams podcast?
Yeah, isn't that funny? And I used to be a Bears fan a long time ago. I grew up in the Midwest and moved around too much almost to have a hometown team. And when I left overseas for Australia, I came back. I moved to LA on the same day the Rams did. I was excited to be in a city that was now hosting a new team or a team actually moving back. But yeah, a little coincidence there, but I am a Rams fan and go by Bear. So you got to get used to it, man. Got to get used to it. But I still have ties, and that game that comes up late in the year, I believe in December when the Rams come out there, I still have a lot of family in the Chicago area, so I may have to hit you up when I'm out in Chicago fighting that cold to watch that game. It's going to be a good one.
Well, now that all my listeners hate you because you're no longer a Bears fan.
Exactly.
I think this is going to be a fun conversation because of all the comparisons that, you know, the Chicago Bears are being talked up, you know, both by the local media and the national media, potentially as, you know, could they be this year's version of the Los Angeles Rams last year? So, you know, I want to toe the line here a little bit between talking about the Rams of last year and talking about the Rams of this year, because, you know, they've made a lot of changes, mostly significant improvements with some talent additions at key positions that I know I want to get into. But I guess just to start, how would you describe the sort of the magic and the innovation and the novelty of the 2016 Los Angeles Rams? Excuse me, the 2017 Rams.
Oh, man, I was going to say the 2016 Rams were a nightmare. it was the curse of Jeff Fisher. It was the last hurrah of him. But 2017, it's tough to describe as far as what the magic was. It's really, I mean, if we're going to put a word on it, it's McVay. You know, it was the McVay effect. He came in, really took over this team and just changed everything that was going on as far as the mental state, how they practiced, how they came into games, how they prepared, how they played on the road. I mean, they won 7-8 road games last year and did it with ease. I mean, they looked more comfortable on the road at times than they did at home. And it was so crazy to see how fast things changed. You saw Jared Goff go from a bust to leading the NFL's number one offense. Todd Gurley, who slumped in his second year, and people started saying, oh, you know, he was a one-hit wonder rookie guy that, you know, probably will never get to that again. And he came back and had an MVP candidacy year. Our defense, who kind of where we thought was our really, really strong suit, struggled at times with the run, but Aaron Donald individually came out, won Defensive Player of the Year. So we finally had players that we knew were good really go to that next level. And a lot of it's got to be given to Sean McVay and the way that he kind of just changed that attitude around here. I mean, they came in with the catchphrase, we, not me, and everyone bought in right away. I mean, you see it with the addition of Brandon Cooks. He said when he got here in OTAs and just got to hang out with Sean McVay, he knew right away he wanted to do that extension, which was just, you know, granted to him a couple days ago. So you can tell right away that people are really, you know, buying in. They're buying in fast out here in L.A.
When you look at sort of the dynamics of this Rams team, I mean, what offensively, what made them so good? What was able to kind of take Jared Goff to that next level from a, you know, from a schematic standpoint, from a player personnel standpoint? I mean, what was the big difference? I mean, obviously Jeff Fisher kind of came from a conservative background and was a very vanilla run the ball, and there's the parallels to John Fox in Chicago are extreme, but I mean, what were some of the key differences offensively that allowed Jared Goff to have that ascension?
Yeah, you mentioned John Fox there. For a while, we heard a lot of John Fox is basically Jeff Fisher that had Peyton Manning for a couple years, and it seems like it couldn't be truer. But as far as personnel over here and what really happened and part of that magic and where Jared Goff was allowed to really take that step and that leap forward, was definitely we started protecting him. You know, we went out and got Andrew Whitworth and Sullivan to play the center position. Saffold really found himself at left guard and was able to take a next step in his development as what we all thought he could be. He was a great leader already, but he just didn't seem to kind of put all the intangibles together and really be able to be that consistent guy you could count on. But I think we also were expecting too much of him. So when we got to really put that weight on Andrew Whitworth's shoulders and let him kind of lead from there, his game just really took up into another level. And then going downfield, you know, being able to be to have Sean McVay and the creative mind that he does on the offense side of the ball to, I mean, one of my favorite things to do is just go back and watch some of the film and watch some of the plays that I've been watching football a long time and some of the formations and how he moves people around. I have never seen in football and I loved it. And I think you could see defenses kind of reacting that way and not knowing how to cover or, and it made for a lot of easy throws for Jared Goff. You always hear, you know, when guys are coming to the league, you know, get a really good tight end, someone that they can kind of dump the ball to, or they can have that safety net, you know, when it's short yardage or whatever it is. And if you watch a lot of the throws that Jared Goff was doing, you know, a lot were to Todd Gurley, a lot to Cooper Kupp across the middle, Sammy Watkins. I think 8 of his touchdowns were scored within the within 10 yards in the red zone. So he had a lot of short passes. But then when he was allowed to open up the, you know, open up the field and throw deep, that was one of the things coming out. You know, everyone said Jared Goff's got a really great arm. He was never able to really show it off last year. And when he did, it seemed like he was just kind of closing his eyes and chucking it up there. So his deep ball accuracy really started to pick up. And as we mentioned, Todd Gurley had an amazing year, not only out of the backfield catching the ball, but running. So looking at Pro Football Focus, Jared Goff is a top three quarterback as far as when it comes off the play action. I mean, his being able to use that strength in Todd Gurley in the run game to kind of buy him a couple more seconds and then, you know, be able to be accurate with the ball, all those things combined just happen at once in one season. You know, we're looking for those things to happen over a couple years, work on this, you know, grow on some chemistry with Cooper Kupp, and all of a sudden this rookie and him hit it off. You know, Todd Gurley takes the next level, not only, you know, running, but out of the backfield. Protection up front was great right out of the gate. So these things just happen so fast. So even for us out in LA, we had some expectations of what we thought the team could be, but, you know, as it went and we kept going, we kept winning on the road and, you know, we kept staying near the top of the division and then, you know, going up and blowing out Seattle near the end of the year was just kind of the icing on the cake. You know, you want to see us kind of win a playoff game is kind of really the next hurdle for us. But, man, a lot of big steps real fast out here in LA, and the buzz has turned up to 100 out here.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned it in sort of that context of, you know, exceeding expectations and kind of abnormally developing. And I think, you know, I try not to be, you know, pessimistic, but just realistic with the Chicago Bears and, you know, a first-year head coach and a young quarterback and, you know, all the parallels that you draw between these two teams, that it's maybe not fair to expect a Los Angeles Rams-type turnaround. I mean, the blueprint is there, but the reality of, you know, so many things going right with, you know, the offensive line, like for the Rams, how many things went right? Todd Gurley has a phenomenal year. You know, the offensive line gets better, and a veteran like Roger Saffold kind of has a revitalization and a real aging, you know, offensive line, guard, tackle. Andrew Whitworth, comes in and has another revitalization at left tackle. And, you know, the third round wide receiver steps up and has a big year. And, you know, Robert Woods kind of comes out and exceeds what he was able to do in the past. And, you know, it seemed like all these little things kind of come together for a team to have that level of success. And just realistically in the NFL, it's pretty rare when all the pieces kind of fall in line like that.
Yeah, that's exactly right, and it almost makes you a little nervous coming into the season. We added more and more and more. Obviously, we added on the defense like crazy, adding three Pro Bowlers with Tlaib and Peters and Ndamukong Suh, and we're still really trying to lock up Donald long-term, and, you know, he's talking about not coming to camp until then. But and you're just like, can we do it again? You know, are we assuming these things to be true because we saw them last year and expecting them to be, you know, just the same, if not better? And that is the one thing out here. Expectations are flying like crazy. And, you know, I'm kind of glad you kind of mentioned that because everything kind of coming together. You saw the Bears last year, you know, Mitchell Trubisky. Am I allowed to call him Mitch? Has that been vetoed Did he talk about that? Is it Mitchell moving forward?
No, so initially it was Mitchell because, like, that's what his mom called him, and that was just kind of – and I think a lot of, you know, media organizations have just kind of stuck with it. But he has said multiple times, call him whatever. I think a lot of his teammates just call him Mitch. So I instinctively say Mitchell, but most people are at Michigan.
Okay. I just thought it was funny when it came out and it was like – you know, he got drafted and he like kind of made this thing about it. And I was like, oh man, that you're going to get made fun of now because neither name is truly cool. And now you're just going to really, you know, be stubborn about it. But okay. So Mitch, I'm going to go back to Mitch. Let's go let's rock Mitch here for a little bit. But you know, you saw things really come together. You know, he has the offense. They went out and got Allen Robinson. You know, Kevin White, I'd love to hear your thoughts on you know what you're expecting from him, but I don't know too much about the offensive line, but you know we did see some similarities as far as you know Jordan Howard and having that dominant runner, which I think is a huge part of being a young quarterback. Trubisky has enough of the you know I don't want to say it because it's you know old rival, but that Brett Favre mentality of just throw it in there. Which you kind of like and probably gets him into trouble sometime, but you love the aggressiveness in the quarterback play, and he also can take it down and run. But I'm excited to see how it comes together for you guys because you're right. There's a lot of comparisons going on. And so kind of counter question to you, two things would be what, you know, how is Chicago taking that as being kind of they could be the next year's Rams? I don't know if there's any, you know, any backlash for that or if that's kind of a slap in the face in a sense or because they want to build their own identity. And then two, you know, how do you see some of those things coming together? Because you see the pieces in place, but, you know, maybe talk to me about, you know, how you think they're actually going to unfold a little bit.
Yeah, so the Bears have been very careful for, you know, from the player and coaching standpoint with what they say about this season. And, you know, I think Mitch has in particular talked a lot about how he's very confident that this team is going to be successful, but you haven't heard any kind of, you know, guarantees. You know, they talk about that they obviously want to compete. The goal is to compete for a championship, but, you know, they understand that the chances of that in year one are pretty low. So, you know, I think Mitch recently said, you know, that, you know, we're going to be good, and I think it's going to be this year that you start to see us good, but it's not necessarily this, you know, full on, we're going to win 12 games and rock the NFL. I mean, they're excited, they're optimistic, but they're not publicly setting themselves up to disappoint or to put the expectations on themselves too high. Although I think the more positivity that has exuded out of every press conference and, you know, practice, and I think training camp's only going to ramp this up, that all the players are raving, and there's just this comparison to how it was last year compared to this year just makes everything this year seem five times better, even when maybe some things are just kind of getting back to more of a normal and not above and beyond, but it just feels above and beyond because of the coaching inefficiencies of last year. The offensive staff was really the opposite of creative, and there was some John Fox influence there. And, you know, fortunately, they retained their defensive coaching staff top to bottom. And
right.
nine out of the 11 defensive starters are back. And one of those is not back because Roquan Smith was their first-round pick, and he's going to take one of those spots. So realistically, they're looking at 10 out of 11 defensive starters in place from last year with only one potential change there. So a lot of optimism and for the way it's going to come together defensively. But offensively, there's a lot of moving parts, and the confidence level from them has not wavered. They're all in on Matt Nagy pulling out all the stops and using his creativity to make it all work. But you've got a lot of new faces filling in a lot of new positions, and in theory and on paper, everything is there for this offense to be incredibly successful. But you come back to the situation of something, you know, statistically speaking, your chances of something going wrong, something is going to go wrong in one area or another. And where that's going to happen, you're not necessarily sure, but you can see the, sort of the blueprint of trying to build a little bit of the Chiefs offense again with Matt Nagy. Trey Burton brought in to play that Travis Kelce role. He's not going to be Travis Kelce level productive this year, but he's going to kind of play that flexible slot receiver, wing tight end, move around position. You got Tariq Cohen and out of the backfield being a versatile weapon, potentially in the Tyreek Hill role, playing more wide receiver than running back. But Taylor Gabriel, the speedster from the Atlanta Falcons that they signed this year, he could kind of be in the mix there. And to wrap up with Kevin White that you mentioned, the Bears are expecting zero from Kevin White this year that the wide receiver coach said, we have no expectations. We have set no expectations for Kevin White. We just want him to come in, practice hard, stay healthy, and whatever we can get from him, we're going to get from him. I mean, he's realistically not going to be a top three receiver on this team. And so he needs to learn how to contribute on special teams if he's going to make the roster and be in the bottom three receivers. I mean, it's too early to say he's not going to make the 53-man roster, but I think if his contract wasn't fully guaranteed as a first-round pick, he would not be making this team for sure. He just hasn't shown enough to contribute and be on that. But I think one way or another, he sticks but doesn't play any significant role in the offense.
Yeah, well, you said it. The coaches, you know, have – you know, zero expectations for him. And I think probably, you know, suffering from the fan base, that's probably the same expectations as they've already, you know, wasted all their, you know, high expectations on what they thought he was going to be. So maybe that's what he needs most, be healthy and don't have a lot of expectations and kind of just go be and do what he wants. You talked about Trey Burton coming in and playing that Travis Kelce role. It would be nice to see him be Travis Kelce since they ended up paying him almost felt like he was Travis Kelce. A lot of money spent in the offseason there, but they needed it. They needed it to revamp that offense. I don't know if he's actually going to be the guy at tight end to take that huge, you know, leap, but if they can really move the football down the field, he showed, you know, in his run with the Eagles that he can make big plays and, you know, always look for that little, you know, quarterback throwback, you know, for some yards. But, you know, you had talked about, you know, kind of how it all came together. For the Bears, I guess kind of looking in, one of the big things that, you know, was kind of, I was reflecting back as you were talking about these pieces coming together and you always expect something to go wrong. One of the things that, you know, we could chalk up last year as well was the health of our team. We didn't have any major injuries. Our offensive line started every single game together. So it is, you're right. As you were saying that, it kind of clicked in my head is that there's so many other things and pieces that, you know, you can have the right players, you can have the right coaches, but putting everything together for a whole season is always pretty difficult, and some things are just out of your control. So that's another thing that's random that, you know, always got to look out for. And, you know, hopefully, as we talked about Kevin White and, you know, his, you know, injury and coming off of that. Do you see Allen Robinson as being kind of the guy, the number one guy that can go out there and take that load?
Yeah, that's the expectation, but it's – and I have no reason to doubt that he's not – he's a 1,000-yard receiver this year. I mean, that seems – more likely than not, but it just kind of, it's just one of those things where, you know, he's coming off the ACL injury, so there's always some question marks there. He hasn't fully participated in practice yet, but he's supposed to be ready to go for training camp, which starts this week. They're reporting already. And then, you know, Taylor Gabriel's probably the number two, and he's never quite been a true number two receiver in Atlanta, so they're kind of expecting him to take a step up, but that's not a known, like Robinson's knee. And, you know, like Trey Burton has never been a top tight end in an offense. He's seen flashes, so you're expecting him to come in and do better than he has in the past, but that's not truly known. You throw in the second round wide receiver, Anthony Miller, you know, a rookie. You never really know exactly what you're going to get from there. And even Jordan Howard, as consistent as a runner as he's been, he's had issues with dropped passes in the past. And there was some thought earlier this offseason about whether or not he's the right fit in Nagy's system. You know, looking for a Kareem Hunt type running back that can run and catch out of the backfield. I personally think his receiving issues are a little bit overblown, but if they're not, and if that becomes a problem, it's just another one of those things where you have all these pieces here, and if they all perform the way that the team thinks they will, then you're going to have a St. Louis or a Los Angeles Rams-level offense. But the chances that, you know, they stay healthy and, you know, like the injuries on the offensive line last year were huge, and you brought back four of the same five guys, you know, are they going to be able to stay healthy after, you know, having that be an issue last year again? There's just a lot of moving parts and a lot of things coming together that you question, okay, what, maybe it's just from being scorned as a Bears fan over the last, what, 10-plus years and the playoff drought of 8 years now of things always do go wrong. So maybe, yeah, what am I expecting to go wrong even when everything's looking right?
Exactly. And the fun thing about, you know, I look back to, you know, following the Bears and, you know, some of the history that they have. You know, you guys get almost two little mini playoff games within the regular season. That's every time you guys match up against Green Bay. It feels like forever since the Bears have beat the Packers, and you might have better knowledge than I do there. But, you know, if they really want to take that next step, it starts by taking down Aaron Rodgers in that division. As you're looking across the division, obviously the Vikings, you know, went deep into the playoffs last year and, you know, with a magical play, got them a game further. They've added Cousins to be the quarterback there. But how are you looking at the NFC North and how that matches up and where you guys fit in? Because there's a lot of talk about, you know, could they be the Rams of 2017 and make that blast up? You know, personally, yourself with Locked On Bears, you know, where do you see the Bears fitting in, and how does that division really shake out, you know, as you kind of pull out?
And I think this right here is exactly the biggest difference potentially between last year's Rams and this year's Bears. That last year, the Rams were able to pretty well handle that division. You know, they got Seattle in the worst year in recent times. Arizona obviously fell apart with injuries, and San Francisco wasn't really much of a threat until they got Jimmy Garoppolo. And even then, it took a few weeks before they were really particularly strong. So, I mean, the Rams, I think, what did they win, 5 out of their 6 division games last year? I don't have the number in front of me.
Yeah, they did pretty well in the division. You're right. We swept the Cardinals. I think we actually split with the Niners because it was week 17 and we didn't start our starters. And then we split with Seahawks. We dropped a touchdown here at home in the Coliseum. So, but you're right. That's a good point.
Yeah, and so you look at Chicago. That, you know, what were they, 5-11 last year? They could very well have a great improvement season, and Mitchell Trubisky looks strong, and the offense is clicking and looking innovative, but they finish 8-8 and fourth in the division because, you know, the Lions were 9-7 last year. They've got a new head coach. They're kind of looking for that same first-year head coach bump to kind of push them up back into playoff contention, and Aaron Rodgers returns to the Green Bay Packers, so they're not going to be a pushover, and certainly that didn't make a difference last year when the Bears played them. And, you know, the Vikings, a Super Bowl, maybe not favorite, but a top Super Bowl contender. I mean, the Bears might be in the most difficult division in the NFL right now, certainly up there among the top 2 or 3, and chances are they don't win more than half of their division games, and probably less. And, you know, that can make it tough, especially when you look at the rest of the schedule and you have a team like the Rams being thrown in there. And you know, they have some easier games early on, but they play the Patriots in the NFC East. You know, the Giants could be a team on the up. They play the 49ers, who are certainly on their way up. I mean, I think just from a schedule on paper and a strength of division standpoint, this Bears team could have a great 8-8 season and feel really good about the way they played and just still finish last place, still miss the playoffs, and that's okay. I mean, that's a good, reasonable first step improvement. You know, I think that should really be the expectation, is look significantly better than last year, and if that turns into a surprise playoff push, great, but that's not where I would put my money.
Yeah, you nailed it, and with the divisions as far as NFC North being one of those top divisions out there, and, you know, only getting stronger in the offseason with, you know, the return of Rodgers and Cousins, the Bears are going to have to take care of, you know, business at home for sure, as you're talking in the division, and, you know, then go and prove yourself, as a thing kind of reflecting back to the 2017 Rams. I talked about how great they played on the road. It was one of the things that really propelled them into the playoffs. I mean, we would not have been there if we didn't go on the road and beat the Cowboys. We didn't go on the road and beat Jacksonville and really build kind of that confidence that they could not only play with some of the best teams out there, but do it, you know, thousands of miles away from home. Nice thing looking at our schedule moving forward is last 2 years we've been the number one most traveled team in the NFL. Going to London twice always, you know, really bumps you up there. But we had a bunch of trips across to the East Coast. And this year I think our first longest road trip is about week 8 or 9. We go to Denver. And that's, you know, like a 2.5-hour flight or whatever it is. So that's not terrible. So the Rams are being set up a little bit better this year. And then our overseas game, because when you move locations, you basically are offered up to go into the international games for 3 years. So this is our last year of the international games, and we'll be going to Mexico City. So thankfully not too far again. But that it is crazy how all those aspects come into it. You talked about some of the scheduling that you guys have. You don't have an easy way to get there, but if you get there, man, you guys are tried and tested and ready to go. What is, I mean, talking about, you said they could go 8-8 and be a victory Is that really your expectations, or where do the Bears get and you're happy, and where do the Bears get and you're upset?
Yeah, I'm seeing the team as a 7 to 8 to maybe 9 win team, just, you know, playing the odds and the probability there. I think anything less than 6 or 7 wins would be disappointment, just based on what has happened in years past and the way they were able to, you know, drag themselves along to 5 wins last year. I mean, certainly some level of improvement on that is going to be expected. But yeah, I kind of put them in the 7, 8, maybe 9 win range. What about the Rams here? I mean, as much of a high as last year, as we kind of danced around the idea that, you know, is there going to be a drop off, and, you know, is there going to be issues when you trade for some of these high profile talents and you have Aaron Donald potentially unhappy about his contract situation, while at the same time they give out a big contract to Brandon Cooks and they gave Ndamukong Suh a big contract. I mean, guys that haven't even played for the team yet, and we know Aaron Donald is arguably the best player in the NFL, certainly the best defensive player with J.J. Watt injured, and even with a healthy J.J. Watt, I'd be darned to put anybody above Aaron Donald right now. But, you know, you throw in the personalities of Marcus Peters and Aqib Talib and Ndamukong Suh, you know, not that these are guys that get into a lot of legal trouble, but just guys that are, you know, more outspoken and you know, have had some potential attention drawn to their names in the past. I mean, he's, you know, Sean McVay is still a young head coach, and I know the experience of Wade Phillips is there to kind of help him, but how do you see the pieces coming together here, especially the new ones with the Rams?
Yeah, it's a great question. It's one that we're getting a lot these days, obviously, as you're looking at, you know, you named them all there, and like you said, not so much off the field trouble, but some pretty intense personalities on the field, right? Obviously, even Sue, throwing him in there with some of the, you know, messes that he's gotten into on the field and the way he plays, where some call it dirty. And I probably called it dirty a couple years ago, but now he's on my team and I'm like, I love it. You know, you want that guy to shake it up. You want the guy that everyone looks at and they're like, man, I hate him. But if he's on our team, I'd probably love him. Yeah, set the tone. And, you know, it's a great question, and we don't know yet. But from what we're kind of diving into and what we're kind of really feeling off from the team that they're putting out is a couple things. One, you nailed it at the end, Sean McVay, young guy, but he's made people buy in. You know, you get the likes, and I mentioned him earlier, but Andrew Whitworth coming in. And one of the reasons he said, I could have signed a couple other places, but when I met Sean McVay, I knew right away. I knew right away this is a place I want to be and that I could buy into this guy's scheme and what he's pitching. And then on the counterpart, when they hired Sean McVay, he instantly reached out to Wade Phillips and brought him over. And it couldn't have been the best 1-2 combo, because you got a guy who, you know, needs to borrow an ID to go buy a 6-pack of beer. And then, you know, you got the guy who, you know, used to drink beer out of a can with the rip-off tops. You know, I mean, they've got best of both worlds as far as age and, you know, understanding of this game. So they're able to play both areas as far as players, however they need to. And the things you always hear about Wade Phillips and players that play for him, he's a coach, you know, player's coach. You know, he's not out there screaming and yelling. One of the things that Peters and Talib both said is that they love how he puts them in position to go make a play. And if they don't make the play, they're not in trouble, you know, because they put them in the position to get there and also put people in position to back them up or to, you know, allow them to go try to make that play. Talib obviously had some of his best years in Denver with Phillips. So that's one of the great things when they brought him over. It was almost like this extended leadership on the field, even though, you know, he's had his chain robbing days. And we actually will see that matchup again in the preseason.
Oh, yeah.
When we face Crabtree and the Ravens. So that's going to be fun. See if he can get his, you know, third chain for the collection. But, you know, he's kind of that on-field guy and that veteran that, really, when they went and got Peters, they're hoping that, one, he can kind of take him under his wing and go, look, I'm exactly like you. You know, I'm this, you know, volatile, you know, kind of crazy, you know, very emotional player that's kind of gotten me a little trouble on the field, but definitely on his later years in his career. And to take Marcus Peters and go, look, this is Wade Phillips. This is how he runs the system. We can be a little crazy, but we got to not think about, you know, throwing a flag into the stands. Like, that's where we got to stop. You know, we got to be able to you know, have that mentality to know we can't hurt the team. So I love those two together because they're kind of the same, but at different ages and points of their career. So I think they're going to work well together in that system. You talk about how, you know, paying some of these guys and how does Donald feel. The great thing you got to love about Donald, even when he's been so quiet about this contract, we talked about this yesterday on Locked On Rams, is that he hasn't come out and said, this is ridiculous, I need my money. It's just his persona as he understands the business, but they've kept everything in-house. Even to the point when Cooks got his, you know, his big deal yesterday, wasn't Adam Schefter, you know, breaking it with sources. It was the Rams on their own Twitter putting it out, and then all of the reporters going, oh, the Rams just told us that they signed their guy. Like, I love that about that, is they're just keeping everything in-house. They're not really getting, you know, allowing the news to have that soundbite or to get that quote to blow it up, to build that riff. So, and one of the things about signing Cooks to the long-term deal was really kind of hoping that we could move some of his money around this year, put into a signing bonus and make a little bit of that extra room that we need to go sign our guy Aaron Donald. So I think weirdly in a way, even though Aaron Donald probably will be the last person signed coming into training camp, when ideally we would have loved to have him be the first guy to be signed, I think all that needed to happen. And they have, I mean, they're going down to the penny here with, you know, getting Sue done. They had to cut Kayvon Webster, who was a fan favorite, but tore his Achilles, another guy that came over from the Denver system. So they made some moves to make sure everyone got where they needed to be as far as money-wise. And we're expecting to get the deal done for Aaron Donald before the training camp comes, just because last year he missed all of training camp. He missed the first season of the first game of the season, and crazy enough, still dominated the league and won Defensive Player of the Year with missing the first game, and then he sat out the last game. So if we can get him in camp and get next to Sue and start to really, you know, work with this defense, because, you know, again, the one crazy thing is there's so many different pieces. I was watching the Atlanta Falcon playoff game where we lost, and I was looking at that defense, and, you know, Robert Quinn, Alec Ogletree, all those guys are gone. Those were leaders of that team last year. So there's definitely a gap in that middle linebacking area to see who's going to be the guy that's going to really step up to the next level. Is it Mark Barron, who's been in the system for a while? Corey Littleton is a guy that everyone's really excited about here that was, you know, got some time last year. I think he went undrafted out of University of Washington and really has kind of stepped up into that role. So there's a lot of questions. If there is any questions of the roster, it's in that linebacking core. But I think this defense, you don't know how they're going to play together, but if you look at OTAs, there was a lot of great stuff coming out. But that is something we do here, is how are these guys going to all click together. Only time will tell. But on paper, it gets us really, really excited out here in Los Angeles.
So in terms of more general expectations, I'm sure Super Bowl gets thrown out there a lot when you have, you know, such excitement from last year. They go 11-5 in 2017 in the big surprise. What's sort of the win-loss range that you're expecting, or what's sort of the two sides of the poles here?
Yeah. Yeah, expectations are really, really high. I mean, you'll talk to Rams fans out here that will, with a dead face, look you in the eye and say, it's a Super Bowl or I'm disappointed. And you're like, what? How is that even real? Like, how is that a real expectation? Do you understand how hard it is to get to the Super Bowl, let alone just, you know, say your expectation is to win the Super Bowl? You know, coming from a team that finally won the division and got to the playoffs for the first time in forever, and all of a sudden we want Super Bowls. But in a sense, I'm not too far behind them, because I think expectation definitely is they went out and won 11 ball games last year. Looking at how that kind of came, there were a couple that we really could have won even more. I think we even had a chance to win about 13 games last year. There's, you know, we dropped a touchdown in the end zone. We missed a field goal in one of the games. And so I really think that we have to hit 11 games to be like, okay, you know, get us to the playoffs, win 11 games, and then we got to win a playoff game. We got to get one step further than we did last year. We hosted the Atlanta Falcons. We had two fumbles from our Pro Bowl kick returner, Farrah Cooper, which was just shocking to all of us. He had been so almost untouchable the whole season. We had Tavon Austin back there earlier in the year, and he was Mr. Fumbles. So we put in Farrah Cooper, and he did amazing, obviously earning himself that Pro Bowl, you know, nod. But, you know, we got to get back to the playoffs, got to win a playoff game. I think getting to the NFC championship game is about where I circle my expectations. And that's, even as I keep saying that out loud, I'm like, God, it still sounds a little crazy. but I think that's where it needs to be. And I think the great thing about it is they have this fun TV series that they're doing on Facebook, the Rams. It's called Behind the Grind. And it's been like Hard Knocks of the off season, basically. And it's my addiction, because just watching these guys and hearing how they talk, and obviously, yes, we know it's a production put together by the Rams, but you can just see the mindset of what they're expecting. You know, how McVay came in, and it's not just a one-year wonder, let's turn this around, let's get some excitement. Like, he's coming to bring championships, and they're setting the offense up that way. They're setting the defense up that way. They're spending money. You know, they've got extremely talented guys. They're the number one offense in the league. I think it's going to be important for us to – I don't think be the number one offense in the league again. That's tough to go back to back. I mean, if we can get it done, hey, that'd be awesome. But they need to be again. They've got to be in the top five. They've got to be able to move that football, because it was so key to them last year. If our defense can step it up and put us in good positions and really go and you know, that was a point of the season that we're just like, we're going to score more points than you. Like, you can put up 25, sure. We're going to go put up 37, 40 points. So whatever you have to do, you know, we're going to put up a lot of points. And I think they got to continue to stay in that attacking mindset. But I love our wide receiving core. It's kind of, you know, nothing to brag about as far as big name. You know, Brandon Cook is by far our biggest name. And as I saw the contract stuff come out, people are like, wow, they're giving him top three money. And he's like a top 15, top 20 wide receiver. And I love that. I love that people think that. Because, you know, one, maybe it takes, you know, it puts a little chip on his shoulder to go out there and prove himself. But two, we have Robert Woods, who you had mentioned, who kind of stepped up last year, really over, you know, achieved on what we thought. A little side fact really quick. He had a thing in his bonus that if he had gotten to 1,000 yards that they would have or 800 yards, sorry, 800 yards that they would have given him like an extra $500,000. And he didn't play the last week of the season, and he was 12 yards short. So he would have gotten it, obviously. And I love it because the Rams organization noticed that and said, you know what, we sat you for your health reasons, so here's your $500,000 bonus anyway. So they gave him the bonus, which goes so far in this organization, seeing like, all right, if I do, you know, so many organizations are so cheap and so like, well, you didn't get your bonus. And we went and kind of just said, you know, here's your bonus. You busted your tail out here. We, you know, honestly, I don't think anyone thought he was going to go get that. And, you know, he got right there. So pretty cool stuff. But excited about the wide receiving core, and they're all locked in for the next 3-4 years, which is also really cool. So if they can really hold together and really do what they did last year, it's not only a team that can go and make a deep run in the playoffs just this year, which I've heard a lot of, Super Bowl or bust. And I don't think that's really the mentality. I think the Rams are going, you know, almost in the dynasty or bust. They're really looking to go, you know, multiple years deep into the playoffs. So exciting stuff, you're right. But we'll see when it comes out, because, you know, on any given Sunday, Monday, Thursday, and occasionally Saturdays, anything can happen.
Well, it sounds like they're furthering the blueprint that whatever they do this year, you know, if the Bears are trying to copy what they did last year, then next year the Bears will be trying to copy what they do this year or avoid making the mistakes they might have made. So I'm sure the Bears fans and the hopefully the Bears organization in general, they'll be keeping an eye on, okay, what are the Rams doing now? Should we copy that, or should we do something different?
Oh, for sure. And I'm excited to see kind of how the Bears come out of the gate. I think getting off to a good start was big for us last year. You know, we had a winning record, you know, pretty quick into the season, and we're able to build off that. So it's going to be exciting to see how Mitch can come out and lead that team. You know, looking just quickly, I pulled up the roster. You got some of my old favorite Rams. You know, they're not highlights on your team, and I don't know if they'll even make the roster, but you've got Eric Kush, who's a backup center for you guys, backup lineman, who back in the Hard Knocks days when we actually had that, when they moved out to L.A., was a big star of that show and is just a really funny guy. And then Benny Cunningham was a huge Rams favorite out here in L.A. And, you know, hopefully those guys, I know that's a deep roster that he's got to climb up with Cohen and Howard in front of him. But you got some guys that we recognize out here on the West Coast. And I really hope you guys do, you know, get to that, because I think it's what we – I think our matchup is like week
14,
10
or
– oh, 14.
13
okay,
or 14.
Yeah, we're in December. That's a good game. You know, that is potentially, if we're in the flex zone, that can maybe be flexed to Sunday night or something, because if that ends up being, you know, two teams pushing for playoff position, man, that's going to have that stadium rocking. And like I said, it's right around that Christmas time, so I might be in Chicago, have to hit you up and grab a beer and talk some trash during the game.
Absolutely. Bear, I appreciate you doing this crossover. It was a blast. I think I learned a lot about the Rams. I hope you and your listeners learned a lot about the Chicago Bears, and hopefully it was a nice little trip down memory lane for you.
Oh yeah, always good, man. Chicago, one of my favorite cities outside of LA. So great stuff. I think the listeners are going to love it. Anytime, and in fact, when we get closer to that matchup, maybe we'll jump back on and kind of see where we're at and how everything's kind of played out and what our thoughts were and how that kind of went. So we'll do this again when we get into the season. Best of luck getting there. Number one thing, stay healthy on the roster. I hate to see people go down, so stay healthy, and we'll see you in December.
Sounds like a plan.